John, how we doing?
Hello, Daniel. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. It's nice to meet you like this, just the two of us.
Just the two of us. No, we're not impaneling anyone or anything. I don't know if we've actually, so we do have somebody else on the call. We have Steve Smallman, who is the, what is your title? President, founder, CEO?
King of the universe.
Jefe?
Oppressive overlord. No, I am now the founding partner and chief strategist of 15-4.
I love it. And
the FPCS.
15-4.
Yes.
Do you want to introduce 15-4?
Sure. We're a.
I was gonna do a bad description of it, and then I was like, you know what? We have somebody on the call who could do a better description of it.
It probably would have been a good description. We are a boutique creative services firm. We do a lot of content, soup to nuts, everything from brand strategy, positioning, messaging, core story stuff into identity work, which then becomes websites, animations, videos, and all the assets that trigger associations with a brand. So from concepts to content, that's us. Mostly B2B clients, but also some retail here and there. A lot of technology. Tech has kind of slowed down a little bit, as you know, but picking back up. So anyway, we've been around for 20 years.
That's great.
And notably, the first person to pay me a salary to write code for a living.
Yes, I was going to bring that in, that you were the 15-4 web OG. You were the web department. And now that is...
Yeah, there was a moment there.
That is one of our major business units. So thank you, Daniel, for inaugurating the web practice at 15-4.
Yeah,
happy to do it.
I actually remember that conversation well. We were interviewing you for some kind of a freelance gig, and you kept asking really good questions. And then the more we progressed, you at one point just sort of abruptly said, "So what are we talking about right now? Because this feels like a job interview." And and then as soon as you left, another one of my colleagues waited until you were out of earshot, and then he just sort of blurted out, "Okay, can we just hire that guy?" And
that's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
And Steve is also, you know, it's funny, I always say that you're my cousin, even though technically you're really not my cousin. I guess you're married to my cousin.
But, correct.
And it's very funny because Daniel and I are both good buds with your son, Paul, who referred Daniel in initially. And Paul has said for years that he thinks he should have gotten a cut of Daniel's salary for referring him in, which I don't really think is how referrals work. But he's continued on where every time Daniel does something successful, Paul texts me and is like, "I really think I should get a cut of that." And then we started Thunk, and Paul texted me and was like, "Where are my shares?" I thought I was pretty sure I was entitled to something here.
Well, you know, whatever pittance we were paying Daniel at that time, I'm sure, you know, Paul's meager cut wouldn't have amounted to much.
Yeah.
but I mean that job was awesome because, you know, I think like when I started that job, it was like we didn't exactly have clients yet, right? Like there was nothing really, we weren't really selling anything to anyone yet. We were like, well, I think we can sell something to someone.
Yes.
And so I did a ton of learning on the job, and that, you know, I definitely like don't think I would have like launched as well as I did if I hadn't sort of had that little like launch pad to launch off of.
That's awesome to hear. Well, we definitely were in the I don't want to say fake it till you make it, because we had expertise, but we would take on work and then say, okay, we can do this, let's figure this out now. And we continue to do that once in a while. We currently have a couple of social media retainers which don't tell the clients, but we don't technically do that. And we had a project manager kind of pumping the brakes and freaking out a little bit. And we were like, look, this is how we started web. Like we hired we said yes to a web job, and then we figured out we had to get it done and get it done right. And we did. And so pretty much, you know, 15-4 started when two dummies in a basement with a couple of video cameras and a couple of MacBooks convinced somebody to pay us to do video in 2004, and that was the year before YouTube launched, if you can believe it. And as soon as somebody was willing to trust us with that effort, we like leaned in hard and figured it out and went from there. So, you know, that's not how everybody starts, but that's how we did.
Yeah, it's so funny because this is a tangent, but the you know, when people look from the outside, people who like haven't done anything entrepreneurial or have never worked in tech, look at something like Theranos, which was like obviously fraudulent, terrible, like that, you know, that was really bad. But people were like, oh yeah, that's so crazy that you would go out to like investors and potential business partners,
Henry Kissinger,
and tell them that you're building that, you know, that you're building something with a ton of confidence when it doesn't yet exist. And I was like, well, yeah, but that is also kind of the entire premise of like every Silicon Valley company, like even really good companies
totally
do that. And like it's weird because it's like she committed fraud, obviously that was like terrible, but it's also like she probably believed that it was going to work the same way that every entrepreneur believes that it's going to work, you know.
Well, we actually had a client last year who we helped with a brand identity and then did their entire website, and they're a Bay Area startup and they do liquid biopsy, and it's a biotech firm and it's a legit industry. Like, you know, Theranos kind of ruined it for the rest of the fair players, because while they haven't actually, they're having regular breakthroughs where they're cracking the code. And so this is another firm that they call it liquid biopsy. They take a drop of blood and they can tell all kinds of stuff from it. And so the pursuit was legitimate. It was just that she overinflated their value and claimed that she had accomplished certain milestones that had never been accomplished. So yeah, like you said, everything you said, but it is, yeah, that's not a crazy, weird science field. It's happening.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Okay. Pleasantries, rabbit trails, all of that. The reason we asked you here today is because so early on when Daniel and I were getting started with this, we talked about how we really want to have mentors in place. And we talked for a long time about like, are we going to have like one person who shows up all the time? And we realized we have such a wide variety of different kinds of questions. We were like, you know what we should do? We just like impanel many mentors along the way. And when we have specific questions about specific things that Steve knows, we're just going to ask Steve to come in and talk. And also we sort of, our weekly business meeting just is a podcast because we're doing this whole like kind of build in public thing. And so we figure if you have something interesting to share with us, we'll just share it with everybody.
Awesome.
And where we're at right now, I texted you a bit about this, but like one of the things we're figuring out is we had a few big clients ending around the same time, and we wanted to make a big push to get new clients in. And we've done that, and we've landed some good business out of it. But one of the things that we're thinking a lot about is like, we've never done outbound sales, and we don't really intend to do outbound sales. A big part of what we want to do is just draw people in towards us. And like a lot of that has happened basically through Daniel's Twitter account, and through podcasting and blog posts and things like that. And so like, we're trying to make this essentially basically like a branding play where we're like, we are a pillar in our community and you should want to work with us. And that has worked so far. And it's been really good. So that's like one whole area to talk about. Another area to talk about is more on the like tactical side, where what that has led to is a situation where it's like, we don't have like a predictable sales process where we can say like, oh, we have a pretty good idea of like what's going on in August of this year. And so we can then like plan around it in terms of like, who do we hire? When can we take vacations? All that kind of stuff. Like it is wildly unpredictable. And we're so small that that hasn't really mattered too much, where the only salaries we have to pay are Daniel and me. But we have subcontractors who we'd like to like keep employed and keep around because they're really great. But being sort of in this position where we're like dependent on like drawing people to us, it's been really good because we don't have to spend any money on sales. But it's tough because we're looking ahead and we're just like, it sort of like feels like we're just like at the mercy of kind of whatever's going on out there in the weather. And it's difficult, and it leads to like what we're now describing right now as like silly season, where we're like, we're booked really solidly, but then a bunch of that goes away. But then like on this week where we're booked really solidly, I'm pulling Daniel into like 3 sales calls this week. And it feels like, and then, you know, our subcontractors are like, we're like, we have stuff for you definitely for the next 6 weeks. After that, who knows, you know? And cause we're trying to be really honest with everyone. So like the strategy of trying to draw people to us, those are kind of the two different conversations, I guess. It's like, the strategy of drawing people to us with really good like branding and content. And then the second part of it is like, when that is working, it creates what feels like a very chaotic and unpredictable environment that makes it very, very difficult to plan in. And this is something I've asked you about in the past. So I was like, we are in silly season and it feels a little bit wild. Maybe now's the time to talk to Steve.
Because after 20 years, we're still trying to figure this very thing out. Yeah. Welcome to the services business. Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I don't know where to start. We've spent the better part of a couple decades really leveraging personal relationships and networks. And it's been fairly effective. So it's kind of what you're doing now, right? You're, who do we know? Who can we talk to about what we're now doing, who would be interested and also have a need? And how can we leverage that relationship? Because we've already got some trust based on maybe work we've done. And then as those people move around to their various companies, you know, we will follow them to the, into their new gigs, and hopefully they bring us into their new company. That's kind of how we've done it. And there's been referrals as well that have kind of created this network that you could say is critical mass of inbound. But I will also say you're not wrong to be thinking now, like, what kind of outbound should we be doing, and how can we continue to keep the inbound love going? Because it will dry up. You will exhaust your personal networks. And you will think, oh man, I don't know if I can call them again. You know, we just talked 6 months ago and he didn't have anything for me, etc. And so that's kind of led us into a couple of recent investments, which I'm not recommending yet, because I think while you can, like, while the, like, we have a good friend who's actually become a great partner as well, who was with a pretty large agency for a lot of years, helped them grow a big chunk of their business, figured out at some point they were getting positioned for acquisition and he was never going to be a partner and blah, 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 even though he was an SVP at that point. So he left and has an initial like silly season where he's got more work than he can possibly do on his own because of his stellar reputation and relationships in his vertical in the creative services space. And so he's brought us in to do a lot of his fulfillment. It's been a great partnership. Huh. But I've also kind of, you know, sagely cautioned him, like, you're going to run out of those low-hanging fruit will get picked. Mm-hmm. It'll be gone. You won't be able to trip on an apple as you're walking along and say, oh, I should call these guys. So at some point, you're going to have a little bit of a strategy about how to win business. And so I don't know that you guys are there yet. Like, don't spend money until you must. Like, keep leveraging those relationships. Get early on with a review system and a regular check-in system where you celebrate those wins. Find out what people are currently working on, who they're working with. You know, obviously follow them on LinkedIn if they go to a new spot. Hey, congratulations on the new gig. Would love to hear more about, you know, what caused you to make a move and blah, blah, blah. So all that's great. You're probably doing all that.
That's a really funny example, by the way, because somebody else just recommended that exact thing of like, touch base with like all of your most trusted people right when they change jobs, which is it's funny that you just mentioned that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have sort of the current client base, you have ones that have maybe gone a little dormant, And then you have ones that you had a great experience with and they loved you, but they don't haven't needed you for a while. Those conversations should regularly be revisited and sometimes kind of resurrected. and we have followed, you know, we have a couple clients that we've followed to maybe three different companies. And, you know, whenever they make a move, we follow up and say, hey, you know, remember us? Yeah, we had a great time, didn't we? Yeah, those times were good. Man, we should get the band back together. So I'll do you want me to tell you a little bit about what we've invested in recently, which actually is costing us money to do some inbound? Okay. So everything starts with outbound. I mean, the holy grail is when your phone's ringing off the hook and you become more and more selective with who you say yes and no to, and you figure out your best fit customer. And then at some point you sort of learn by experience, yeah, let's not do that again. And let's do that again. Like, and your best fit customer will also tell you probably better than anyone else, including yourselves, what your real core competencies are, what your real sweet spot. Because when you're hungry and you need revenue and you're kind of taking whatever comes, you get into some situations where maybe it would have been better off to, you know, pass that to somebody else. Like, this wasn't really our wheelhouse, but we took the gig. And when you're talking about sort of defining the category you're in and how to leverage that position among competitors, sometimes your best fit customers will give you the best version of what the, what you are great at. We just finished a rebrand and a website for a company. It was a PE play. They bought an energy company, a back office energy software solution, I should say, not an energy company. They're combining three entities. They need somebody to help them tell a better story. So this guy, after we finished the website, gave us a glowing review on LinkedIn. He said, hey, here's what I love about working with 15-4. And it was like a bulleted list. I'm like, yeah, actually, that is true. I'm going to use that. Like, that's maybe right. Part of our pitch now. You know, they make complicated simple. They make Monday morning Zoom meetings fun. They're right. Brand positioning experts, you know, blah, blah, blah. He just kind of went down the list. I think I just got myself off track into a rabbit hole. What was I talking about?
You were talking about, like, you're investing in something yes. to lead to inbound, the best fit customer.
Thank you. So you do, everything starts with outbound. And whether or not you'll ever get that magical holy grail of plenty of inbound, where you can qualify and disqualify certain leads, decide which jobs you want, that's a toss-up. That may never happen. It may always be a little bit unpredictable, because services businesses, unless you're a lawyer, a law firm or an accounting firm with a niche customer and you're kind of a category king, I don't know, professional services, it's tough. Like, who signs year-long contracts or multi-year contracts anymore? It tends to be project based, and so you gotta, the hustle is kind of always going to be there, but you can find ways to make it less of a whiplash or a roller coaster ride, or the project cliffs that you're talking about, where you're totally booked for 6 weeks and then all of a sudden there's a project cliff and it's like, okay, what do we tell our subs, what do we do now? And then you're restarting the sales cycle, which may take however long it takes, however long your sales cycle is, based on your average ticket value, right?
Right. And what we keep on also have to do, like, what the thing that had never occurred to me until just now is that you kind of have to do the sales cycle during, you have to do it during your craziest times.
Yes.
Because you're like, oh, the crazy times end in 4 weeks. We got to be selling now.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a funny, like, you can't wait until you've drop off the cliff and then start selling.
No, unfortunately not. And yeah, and what you can do, the leverage you have in that is when you are busy, you get to say to qualified prospects, well, here's when we can do this. You know, the answer right. is yes, we can start in the middle of June. Is that time frame work for you? And if it doesn't, then you got to figure out, okay, we're either going to try to bring in more help so we can start a little sooner. Maybe we slow walk the sales process, then we slow walk the kickoff, and we start some things and show signs of life to the client before we're actually deep into the project. But yeah, that's you definitely have to. I've said to our BD people, myself included, I have one of my dumb little witticisms is the clock's not ticking if you're not talking. Because, you know, however long the sales cycle may be, for some people it might be a quick turn because they're ready with BANT. Do you know BANT? B-A-N-T, budget, authority, need, and timing.
Oh, that's good.
They have to have the budget. Mm-hmm. They have to be a
John loves an acronym.
They have to be a decision maker. They have to actually have a need for what you do, and the timing needs to be right for what you do. Now, sometimes you have two or three of those, but the timing isn't right. So fine, that's great. Well, when can we talk again? You know, use a meeting to make a meeting, like before you hang up. When is it cool if I check back in with you? Sounds like maybe a month from now. But once in a while, you have a customer that's got all four of these. They want to go now, and then you've got to decide whether you can accommodate them or not. But basically, you need to constantly be talking. You need to be talking to keep the sales cycle rolling and the conversations warm, and then you can try to pace them out in a way that actually works for your firm. So that's a long-winded way of saying yes to your comment that you have to be talking even when you're busy. What we did last year is we actually hired a BD firm that did something like, 1,500 emails a week, or maybe it was 2,000 emails a week from like Philly down to Atlanta, and made also, I don't know, hundreds of cold calls a week. And after 6 months, because it was a little pricey, we pulled the plug and said, this is cold calling just doesn't work. Well, apparently it does if you do enough of it, like thousands of calls, because almost a year later, we got a pretty good sized client, like a tier one client out of it. And it came from a cold call, and it just took forever for that person to be ready. The timing wasn't right. They liked us. We had a chance to present. Nothing ever.
So they got the email, you fired the vendor, and then they hired you?
Yes.
Awesome.
not on purpose. And we paid them for 6 months. So it wasn't like we owed them a referral fee or anything. It was a pay up front service. Yeah. But yes, exactly. And so that led to a tier one relationship, which is still going. So my brother, who actually hired the firm, felt vindicated because he had apologized to me and another partner multiple times. Okay, well, that was a waste of money. And then that they actually referred us to another company. So now, and that's like a tier two client. So not as big of a ticket, but a pretty decent sized website and budget. And we'll try to land and expand, you know, turn that into more. But so that, you know, what that told me is you got to have the stomach for it, but the monthly investment eventually does pay off. Like, we had a referral into this firm from a client of ours who said they'd gotten a tremendous amount of business from the effort. And so we were like, well, okay, maybe we're just different. Our average ticket is too high for this method. You know, we got a lot of unqualified leads from it. Had a lot of meetings as promised. They just weren't, we didn't amount to anything, or they weren't qualified customers. So we eventually got a great lead. Okay. The next thing, what we're doing now is we've actually just recently engaged with a firm called Sales Schema. They do content and thought leadership, and we like their stuff. The guy wrote a book. When we had a pitch call with him, we were actually talking to the author of the book, so he knew what he was talking about. And they're going to help us they're just going to hold, there's a couple of us that do BD. It's kind of part of our main responsibility. And they'll set up a system that initially does everything for us, but then gradually transitions it all to us. And it'll be the right kind of formula with the right accountability, because unless you're a true lone wolf salesman, which I don't think either of you probably are. My former business partner was, and he was a door buster, and he didn't care how many no's he got. He didn't care if he was annoying you. You know, he would communicate until you told him you were going to call the police if he tried to contact you again. That is not me. I'll pursue a warm lead or a good intro, or if I think I have something that I can do for you that's not duplicative of what you already have, I'll be aggressive. But other than that, I am not that guy, and neither is my brother. And he and I are doing most of the BD. So we will be held accountable to the right kind of activity in the right cadence from somebody who's going to set this up for us and help us automate some of what we're doing. We do HubSpot, we'll see how that goes. It's not as expensive as the last attempt, but we have realized we need help because it's been 20 years. And we've kind of exhausted our personal networks in terms of finding net new. We're using those networks to continue with growth business and reconstituted opportunities. But net new acquisitions of clients, we're kind of out of gas after 20 years.
It's such a funny point because also we've joked on here that four of our first clients were, it was two of my former employers and two of Daniel's former employers. And we were like, that's great. Like, it speaks well to us, but it's also like, I don't have five more of those in the in the hopper, you know?
So the reason we brought you on here, Steve, is...
yeah.
Well, we've talked about partnership. I mean, we should make that another official call. Maybe we don't have to record
sometime,
it.
Without recording.
But you know, we routinely run out of dev capacity. We don't actually do software to, well, I'm getting into the, we'll save it. Let's save it. But yeah, no, that conversation's worth having.
No, but I think, like, John, the point you were making is, like, we sort of, like, there is those sort of, like, early low-hanging fruit of, like, people we have existing business relationships who've done work with us, know that we're good at what we do, and, like, it's sort of an easy sell to be like, hey, I know a problem you have. I know how I would solve it. Like, let's do the thing. Give me some money.
Yeah.
That's like an easy sell, right? Since then, it's been like, you know, I have existing, I guess it's like personal brand capital that I've like accumulated in a particular vertical or maybe a particular horizontal. Where there's like a bunch of people who like know and like and trust me. And so we've been sort of like mining that vein, right? And that has been fruitful.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much everything. Like, have we ever gotten something outside of that?
I don't know. I mean, there's like some referrals that are like, I guess.
But not even explicit referrals. But yeah, it is connected to...
Glitch is an explicit referral.
That's right. That's true. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But it's a referral from somebody who's like in that immediate, like they like and trust and know you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so like we're at a point now where it's like, so like we talked to a guy who does like email lead gen, basically I'm going to put meetings on your calendar, pay for performance type of stuff. And he basically was like, you guys are too... like niche, right? Like I'm not going to be able to like go, like there's just not a million people I can send emails to.
There's not 1500 emails to send. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, I think that's partly true, right? It's true based on like what we currently are doing, right? Which is like solving problems for people who already know what problem they're solving. Hmm. Right. I think there's like a whole other class of businesses who are like, we don't currently have software, but we find that we need software because of something or another, mm-hmm. right? And they don't care necessarily like what tech stack is involved or whatever. They have like really specific business requirements and that's it, right? And those people, like those are the people where I think like something more general and like broad reaching, like you're describing, would be powerful, right? Like right now, I have technical relationships, right? So like my entry into the company is often through the engineers, mm-hmm. right? Mm. And I'm getting recommended to their bosses when they're like, hey, we're in over our heads, let's bring this guy in, right?
Yep.
And I would love to get to a point where like, look, I love the engineers and I always will take a recommendation from engineering over anything else to get into a business, right? But like, that can't be our only entry, right? And so recently we did this little landing page that was kind of like targeted at specifically like businesses with certain types of problems, you know? And we're in kind of this like sales season, silly season moment where we're too booked to actually take anything now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but we do want to kind of like book the next thing, right? So we're like, well, let's take this opportunity to kind of like target exactly at what we want to work on, right? And so we just did it. It led to a bunch of calls, which was cool. But again, like I think most of that was through engineering audiences, yeah. right? And like, that's who it hits and that's where it goes. So I think that's like, if we're really going to grow and scale long-term, like, a part of that is going to have to be like, how do we start talking to people who aren't engineers, right? Like, how do we get them to hear us?
And maybe even more specifically than that, we do have a good sense of like, I mean, the broad market that you could put a BD guy on is what you described, which is like, and I think I've mentioned this to you, Steve. Yeah, it's like companies who don't normally make software who now realize they need to make software, which we hypothesize is kind of a lot of companies. Mm-hmm. And I went and talked to like some people who I know who work in private equity with like, you know, a profitable $5 million company in the Southeast who like is like, oh, we could really use an internal tool. We wouldn't even know where to start. We're not going to hire software developers full time. Mm-hmm. And it's like that's the specific, like not a tech company who at some point in time is like, gosh, we could really spend $150,000 to make an internal app. We're like, oh gosh, we could like crush that. Mm-hmm. That is perfect for us. So that's, I think we're thinking about that as like, that's the audience. If we were to go pursue an audience of people we don't know, I think that's them.
With so many SaaS products and the platform du jour available, like, have you figured out, you just touched on it, you know, what is like the best fit? And we don't have to talk about this now if you don't want to, because this is more my positioning hat.
No,
coming on.
This is great. This is why you're a double threat. you're branding and running an agency guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. So
we just wanted to get some free consulting.
No, hey, anytime. What is the need for, like, so there are so many SaaS products out there, and we know some of the big like platform products, like say Salesforce is a great example mm-hmm. of a company. It's like the biggest elephant in the room that everybody hates having to use because they're the best show in town. But that's why there's mm-hmm. been a proliferation of third party integrators that spring up, because Salesforce doesn't really work for anybody the way it's supposed to out of the box. You have to customize and make it work for said company, which involves developers. This sounds almost like you guys, you're not optimizers or integrators. You are original creators of content when you discover a very specific need for which there is not a platform that could be modified or shoehorned to fit.
Sometimes
that's true. Tell me a little
more. I mean, that's not always true. For example, we have a customer right now who's using NetSuite, which is like a big ERP system mm-hmm. that is all of the similar to Salesforce, has like a whole ecosystem of integration remoras, like sucking on to the bottom of it.
Remora is a great term.
Just, yeah. And like, you know, they basically have a need for like a like basically like a B2B e-commerce app that is customer facing, backed, because like their customers are businesses, right? Like big farms or whatever. It's customer facing, but is backed by like their big NetSuite logistics system that they paid $1 million to some consultants to build, right? And so like we're basically building like a small web app that integrates with their big NetSuite build, right? And so we can do some integrations, right? But often I think where we get brought in is someone's like, well, it's either like spend $100,000 building something or spend $250,000 in getting Salesforce spun up to solve this problem, or getting NetSuite or SAP or some other
for the privilege to pay very large subscription fees forever.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, oh, for only $1 million, you can pay us $500,000 a year forever.
Right.
It's like, great.
And I would also say some problems, like I'm thinking of several clients we've done where it's like some business problems they're just more complex. Where like there's a client we have who has, they're involved in like manufacturing, shipping, managing all of these different sort of like clients and sources that they get, you know, raw materials from, and decoration of those products and all these different things. It's like, I don't know that you could build that with like existing tools. Like that's kind of a ground up thing. But the nice thing is once it's built, it's like there's no subscription fee. They just they own it, you know.
Yeah, and if you're on SAP, Oracle, NetSuite, Momentum, whatever the big ERP platforms are, or one of the ginormous things like Salesforce, you're paying, you know, not only are you paying $1 billion, I'm repeating what you said because I'm getting my reps in understanding you. You're paying ridiculous subscription fees on orders of magnitude, depending on the size of the enterprise, and you're also paying a ton of money to get it to actually work for you. And sometimes you spend a year or 2 years trying to get it to work, and it never quite does.
And then you end up hiring someone like us anyway, except now all your business data is stuck in this system that you don't own, and you have to like exfiltrate it.
Yeah,
which is hilarious also, because that's the hardest part of the thing we built was like figuring out how to interface with NetSuite. It's like, you know, if you just didn't use NetSuite, this probably would have been even easier.
Yeah, we made that mistake once or twice. We tried Salesforce once. We're like, this is for huge companies. This is not for us. And then I got convinced into a lower price argument to jump over to ADP for like comp and Ben stuff. And same exact thing. It was like, this is not for us. And after a year, we quit. But getting our data out was surprisingly a hassle. Like, come on.
Yeah, they're definitely not going to make it easy.
No. It's like the water cooler subscription that I canceled. And because I realized we could have just gone to Costco to buy a $200 cooler instead of paying some dumb monthly fee. And when they came to pick up the cooler, they cut the water line. Like, come on. That was uncalled for. Like, they cut the water line so that when we got our own, we had to, like, re-plumb. Anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's evil.
Yeah, isn't it? So, well, let me ask.
John, how can we start cutting more water?
I want to get to the water line cutting business.
Yeah, right. So, let me ask you this. Do you consider yourselves are you a standalone or an ingredient brand? And an ingredient brand is not necessarily bad. Like, think of Gore-Tex or Vibram. Like, you know, Gore-Tex, maybe they sell Gore-Tex brand apparel, but usually it's like North Face and there's a little Gore-Tex tag on the pocket, which makes you go, ooh, sweet, Gore-Tex. Mm-hmm. Even though you're buying a product made by North Face. So you can actually corner a piece of the market if you decide you are an ingredient brand. Like, are you coming along? How often are you in the Remora role versus, which that sounds too parasitic. Although, I don't know, it's a complimentary relationship.
Well, it's literally parasitic, yeah.
And why do the big sharks let them hang on like that? I thought they were doing something good. You know, you can kind of decide we're an additive or, and in some senses, 15.4 is a little bit of that because we're always happy to play in a multi-vendor landscape. Like, we don't need you to make us your ROI, your agency, your AOR, your agency of record, because those relationships are few and far between now. You need a suite of products over here, or your government services business needs a little muscle, or whatever. Wherever we can fit in, we're happy to do that. You know, and that can be, in some cases, we're a hero brand to those clients because we can do that. We can come in and perform a surgical strike, help them solve a problem, and then create some initial content to popularize it versus having to be the only show in your landscape. Is that, because that's something you should resolve too, to help you.
I think we've done well in both scenarios, right? So like there are, we have clients who brought us, so the nice thing is like John has such like good product experience that like there's a lot of times where someone will hire us thinking we're going to help them solve a hard tech problem. And then it turns out that like there's product problems to solve. There's lots of other problems to solve. And, you know, in a few cases, we've kind of just ended up like getting the whole enchilada put in our laps. And it's basically like, hey, help us figure out what we're building, help us figure out how we're going to build it, and then help us build it. Right. And like, that's a very good, like soup to nuts situation. We've got other situations where it's like, hey, we're like deeply into this NetSuite integration. We've got this team of 20 consultants from New York, and we need you to build this portal. And that turns into 6 months of work. Mm. And so that's another like good situation. I think we do well in both. I think the thing we don't do well is not that we don't do well, but that is like completely underutilizing us is like what we would call like ticket crushing, right? And that's when like we're like have no agency in our in what we're building and how we're building it. We're just there closing tickets that someone else opened, right?
Devs for hire.
Yeah.
Devs for hire. Fully like staff augmentation into someone else's machine, right? Like, I think a big part of what makes us good is that like we actually have some pretty smart opinions about how to build software from like a process perspective, mm-hmm. and like what makes a dev effective and like what order to build things in and what processes to use to build things.
We just had it illustrated perfectly right before this call. We had a new client come in who called us to say like, hey, I'm really nervous about starting later this week because I don't know what I'm supposed to have prepared. I'm not totally sure where you guys should start. I don't have extensive documentation for every problem I want to solve. I don't even have a list of the problems I want to solve. And we were like, no, this is why you got us and you didn't get devs for hire, is because our first 3 days are literally just going to be conversations about that. And well, like, you don't have to have that figured out. And mm-hmm. she's like, oh, okay, great. You know, so I think that's a huge part of that illustrates Daniel's point.
Yeah. Yeah, we will often begin a web engagement, you know, asking, if do you have a requirements doc? You don't? Okay, good. Because we would have rewritten it anyway. We're going to figure out for you, like, what do you need? What kind of an AI? What kind of a UX are we after? And what kind of a nav do we need? And blah, 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 all that other stuff. Like, you don't have to know all that. That's why we're here. So that's cool. So you're both. You're not necessarily just an ingredient brand, although you could be if it's not just Code Monkey stuff. But you're also providing a niche. Is it too nichey? You don't think it is. I mean, that's the thing you want. You want to popularize. This is kind of something that everybody of a certain size with a certain type of need probably should look into.
I think here's what I'll say. I think the top of our funnel right now is too niche for long term, right? So like right now it's like the Laravel community and then like slightly outside of the Laravel community. Laravel's like the framework that I use for pretty much everything, and I've been like involved in for the past 10 years or so. And like, you know, I'm speaking at all the conferences. I have a podcast people listen to. People know who I am in that scene, right? And so like, Laravel devs reach out. That funnel is too niche, too narrow, too like, there are established players there, and to like really grow the funnel like turns into like real serious competition with my friends, you know. So I would rather grow the funnel somewhere else. Right, like obviously I'm always going to have a presence there, and work is always going to come in there, and inbound is easy to come by there, right? But I think necessarily we get brought in into the middle of someone's hard problem a lot there, because it's full of competent developers who call us when they're in over their heads, right? I think there's a whole other thing that we need to be figuring out how to do, which is finding these people who are about to commence on a project and they actually don't care if it's Laravel or what, and they don't have any developers, and they don't, you know, none of that, you know. So that's kind of the place where it's like, and like, yeah, I think there's a world where it's like we just find some NetSuite integrator and like follow them around and say like, hey, next time you're doing a NetSuite integration and you need like you know, some portal to be built for it, we'll build it. And I think that's viable.
Well, and I think maybe to even simplify things further, it's like for the Laravel stuff, to get more specific about the problem we want to solve, I don't think we actually have a big problem to solve on the like Laravel branding stuff, because it's like the brand is Daniel, and like we do good work and have a good reputation.
Good job shifting out of that role and sort of starting to push Thunk to the front.
Right. You know? But like, that's solid. I guess then the question is this other thing, which is how do you find a company in Chattanooga who is profitable and for the first time is flirting with the idea of, you know, it probably would be worth building a little internal app for our employers or employees or something like that. That I have like, we've put almost no work into that, but like our theory is like that's where the gold is.
And I know it is, because other companies I've worked for, like those are like the killer clients, right? Like those, and even with us, like those are the killer clients, you know. Yep. Like when we can come across them.
Yeah, figuring out how to identify that moment of change is,
well, and like they don't all go to the same conferences, right? Like the devs are easy because like they all go to the same conferences. You just talk at all of them, and you get on the podcast they all listen to. And
where are those people even aggregated? I don't know.
Yeah,
and I think they're not, is the thing,
right? So maybe that's where you need a BD guy.
We figured out we kind of work in the midst of change more often than not, and so that caused us to reverse engineer like a half a dozen of our most successful client experiences over the last year or so. And we discovered all of them were PE plays. Like a PE company comes in, buys a majority share, and all of a sudden they're trying to scale in 3 to 5 years so they can flip it. Or they're combining three companies with complementary capabilities, and now they need everybody on the same page singing the same song in the same key. And they're going to need a host of assets once they figure out what that song sounds like. So we were like, okay, wow, we should be talking to PE firms. Like, they're the fountainhead. They don't ever pay us. They introduce us to the client. But, you know, when you're a PE firm and now you own a majority and you just installed a new board chair and you recommend this agency, you kind of got to give them a good look. Yeah. And so, like, get the hint. But so I don't know if there's an RFP vein of ore that you know, identifies which companies are in that midst of change that you want to tap into. You know, I've been on that hunt for the last maybe 4 or 5 months, and it still hasn't quite paid off, but I'm knocking on the right doors. Like, I'm in the territory. I haven't really completely monetized this play yet, but I know this is the one thing our last really successful engagements had in common, so therefore I'm going to pursue that directly. Identifying the moment of change that you want to be in the middle of because you know you can help, then what are the rabbit trails or the threads that indicate, you know, I could get on TechCrunch and find out who's spending money in the PE space, or, you know, when you guys know Paul, who works for Squid, that just got acquired by Nintex. And, you know, I got curious, so I start peeping Nintex, and I'm like, okay, well, this is their sixth acquisition. It is 100% a PE-backed entity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't worry, your job is fine until it's not, you know. Right. And so anyway, that's an example of a door you could push on if you could figure out, like, what are these all, keep pushing on, like, what do all these companies have in common that we know need us, even the ones that don't know what they don't know. And how can I kind of focus my effort there? And then, I mean, for the meantime, though, man, leverage your celebrity, your relative celebrity in the space you're in. I mean, I know you don't want to compete with your friends, but come on, Daniel, you're a killer. You need to be a killer.
No, of course. I mean, and of course, like, we're taking the business where it comes, right? And, like, I just think that, like, long-term, like, there are other veins to mine, yeah. Right? And, like, I would rather just be a player in this space, just giving to that space more and taking from other spaces. But
I get you.
I think either way, like, if, you know, in the long arc of Thunk, maybe it does take us like a year or more to start figuring out how to like get good at doing this, and it's like, well, then we better start now.
I think that's kind of where we're at, right? Yeah. It's like, I don't think we have like any imminent problems or at least like no imminent like existential threats, right? Like, so far, every month's been our best month. Like, it's, you know, we're, line goes up and to the right so far. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it seems like we've built a semi-sustainable business at the very least, right? Now it's like, okay, what's our next, like, season going to look like, right? Yeah. Like, the predecessor to silly season is sales season. The predecessor to sales season is soup season. All right, so soup season is when we're like, oh, we better start canceling some subscriptions. Like, the number in the bank account is not as high as it was last week. Like, let's start tightening our belt.
Right.
Then we're like, we better start selling some stuff. So then we go out and start sell. Then we sell too much stuff. Now we're in silly season, you know, and now we're like overworked, right? And hooray, we did our best month ever again, accidentally, because we sold too much stuff. But now I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, if we want to not be in this, like, long-term cycle of, like, soup season, sales season, silly season, like, how do we find our way to, like, you know, sanity season or whatever, yeah. Right?
Maybe by not, by being busy, your ability to oversell is sort of naturally mitigated because you only have so much time in the day, and you have to take care of your existing clients. You cannot jeopardize any of those relationships. Right. But by sort of just making it, it's, you know, we call it more farming versus hunting. You know, you've always got to be farming. Sometimes the harvest is predictably in the fall. Sometimes whatever, the conditions are right for it to happen sooner than you intended. Or sometimes it's bleak, but we're always farming. And then there's opportunities that we know, you know, that might pop up. You know, an RFP comes through, and we have an inside track. Even though we hate RFPs, we say, "Well, go ahead, and we're going to go after this one." You know, and that's more hunting. Like, we're really going to get after a specific opportunity, and we want to close it. Like, we're going to be as aggressive as we can. Versus just constantly letting people know you're there, putting your thought leadership out there, you know, working, like John, you should maybe consider LinkedIn Sales Navigator if you don't have it, because it it's a pain, but it gives you an extra layer of visibility into the companies and prospects you're targeting. And, you know, make sure you've actually exhausted your existing relationships, because there may be people that you know fairly well who still don't know you guys launched, you know, who would be happy to know that you've launched. And so they should continue to hear good stuff from you, even if there's not an immediate business opportunity. And I'm kind of learning that. And by the way, I actually do have a 1 o'clock.
Oh,
should we? I just realized. Because I'm enjoying this conversation, and I would happily join you.
There's always room for a part two, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now you're impaneled, so you've been impaneled, and we'll have you back.
Hey, I've been tracking with you guys since fits and starts, so I feel kind of like this is kind of a moment. I remember listening to an episode when I was in this room painting it, because we were turning it into an Airbnb. I'm getting personal now, but because I'm in the immortal sanctuary of Colin Schmidt as we speak. I was in here painting once many years ago, listening to a Fits and Starts episode.
Man, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
So, you know.
And I was probably on the other side of the world.
You'll probably hang up and decide, we're never going to get anybody better than Steve. Let's just make him a regular part of the show.
Let's just call it.
No, it's really awesome. Yeah, it's really good. Good talking with you guys. Absolutely.
It's and, you know, very helpful thinking it through with you, too.
And back to where we started, I do think you're, I think you still have some gas in the tank regarding both of your networks. And that's where you should start. It doesn't cost you your time, but you don't have to pay for an external resource. Like, make sure that's exhausted before you start canceling subscriptions to pay for a new one. You can only, you know, we've realized too, we've done all the belt tightening, and like, you can add some by taking away, but at some point the top of the funnel's got to be, you know, you got to have incoming in order to grow. And then you got to decide, what does that look like for us? How many people do we want to hire? Or are we good with an ecosystem of contractors? All that stuff is
We're not going to build a great business just tightening belts.
No, no, but it's a good practice. And I think of the hundreds of thousands of dollars that I've probably wasted over 20 years.
Now, John, picture this. It's a company called Titan.
Oh, wow, yeah.